tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. To celebrate Mother's Day, we have our super mom, Brianna Danielle. And to catch up on what you've been binge-watching lately, we have Susan Dannenberger from Dannenberger Family Vineyards. And it's Friday, so that means it's our political roundtable of Eric Elk, Ken Jakubowski, and Dave Lundy. And be sure to stick around till 1:35 when we play another round of What's That From? But now, the favorite show of listeners from Cicero, Illinois. It's time for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
It's Friday, finally. Everyone just take a deep breath. Hold it for a second. And just a big sigh, a big Friday sigh. It's so grateful that it's Friday and it's Mother's Day weekend. I hope that you have everything in place that you wanted to, whether it's a gift for mom or you know when you're going to make the phone call. I know that for some people, Mother's Day is a little bit rough because maybe you've lost your mom. Maybe this is your first year without your mom. And I want you to know that you're not alone. There are so many people who feel the pain of that. And what we do for Father's Day, because we lost my father in 2001, is that we tell stories about my dad. And I like to, you know, either watch a movie that he loved or eat something that he enjoyed. I mean, not everything that my dad liked. My dad liked liver sausage. He liked liver, not liver sausage, as we've said on this show. I also love the liver sausage, but he liked liver and onions with mayonnaise on rye. So that's not the one I do, but he also liked stewed tomatoes and steak. So we kind of go that route. So in any way that you can celebrate Mother's Day, you know, just make sure you think about mom. Go that extra mile this weekend. And thank you to those of you who've been sending me Mother's Day wishes. I got a lovely card from one of our listeners who he passed it along through Nick D at the movie club on Tuesday. So thank you so much for the Wonder Woman Mother's Day card. We are going to talk to a mom who we consider to be a Wonder Mom in just a few minutes. I don't know. Michael, do you have plans for your mom for Mother's Day?
I don't have any plans as of yet. I may or may not have a few surprises lined up for Celeste Heidemann, but
fair enough. Yes, don't share the surprises on the air. That's a good point. Are you spending the day with your mom?
No, because she lives all the way in McHenry, which is very far away from the city. But I did send her some flowers from Books.com. It's a great, great website.
Books? Really, I've never heard of Books.
Books? Mm. Yeah, and they delivered them today, and I sent her out a card, too, and she likes, like, wacky cards, so I got her one of those
as well. You're a good son.
Oh, you know what? I try.
Excellent. My mom and I are doing something a little bit unique this year, and a friend of mine who works in Washington, D.C., actually works for the State Department. She's part of the team putting together the meetings with North Korea and South Korea, and her mother lives here. She lives in a group home, in a residential community, and she has dementia. And so no one, you know, my friend can't come back home for Mother's Day. Her sister lives in another state as well. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to go and say Happy Mother's Day to her mom because her daughters just can't make it. And, there was a story not too long ago about a Japanese man who was saying that, he doesn't have anyone to take care of him and none of his kids can come see him. And he was feeling very ill. He wanted someone to adopt him. And I thought, there must be people in our community, obviously. There are thousands of people who are alone, who don't have kids or family in the area. And I thought, I'm going to go and be a daughter for somebody else. My mom and I are both going to go. So we're going to go do that on Sunday.
That's extremely thoughtful.
And I love my friend, and I would love to do anything for her. I know that her heart's broken that she can't come see her mom. So that her mom's kind of struggling these days. So that I've never done something like this before. So don't, you know, it just happened to occur to me when I was talking to my friend Claudia. I was like, I'm going to go see your mom. And she's like, what? I'm like, I'm going to go sit with your mom and see how she's doing.
You know, time is the best gift you can give to somebody.
I agree. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go do that. So if you have any, and again, so in any way, and you also, maybe you have a toxic relationship with your mom. If there's somebody in your life that supports you, that maybe fills that mom role, there are ways to pay you know, your adoration for them as well this weekend. Let's take a break here. We're going to talk to Brianna Daniel when we come back, and she is a super mom. More after this on 720 WGN. We all have this idea, I think, at some point that, oh, you know, we're on this path and you have to get this done. You have to be out of high school by the time you're 18 and finish with college by the time you're 22, and then you have to have a job and buy a house and do all the things. And you know what? Some of us figure out that we are on our own timeline. We do things our own way, and we accomplish the things that we set out to accomplish by setting our own goals. And joining us on the line is one of our super moms, Brianna Daniel. Hey, Brianna, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, and I loved reading your story. First of all, your school, Whitney Young, of course, one of the top 10 high schools in the state today. They came out with the list, and you're an alum.
Yes.
Where'd you grow up, Brianna?
I'm sorry?
Where'd you grow up? Where in Chicago?
I grew up on the west side.
On the west side. How long of a commute did you have to Whitney Young? That's kind of a haul, isn't it?
No, it's actually, well, my mom drove me every day.
Oh.
I guess what you would call one of those spoiled kids that didn't have to worry about the bus and all that. But it literally was like a 10 to 15 minute drive.
And you graduated. Now, did you graduate early? Because you were only 16 when you graduated.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, would you graduate a year early? How'd you do that?
Yes.
Okay.
I was actually a student at Whitney Young's Academic Center, so their 7th and 8th grade program.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to get some of my high school credits in those years.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I reached the end of my junior year, I had fulfilled all of the credits that I needed to graduate. And it was at that point that I was just like, you know, I think I'm ready for college.
At 16?
Yeah.
That had to be a bit of a tough transition, and especially you went to Alabama A&M. What was it like making that transition from Whitney Young to being in college just a different, not just with a bunch of older kids, because 2 years makes a difference, but also in the South?
Well, firstly, I didn't go straight to Alabama A&M.
Uh-huh.
I did a semester at Trinity International University out in Deerfield, Illinois.
Okay.
And after that semester, I was just like, you know, this isn't the school for me. I wasn't sure where I wanted to go from there. So
right.
I took a little bit of time off. And afterwards, I realized, you know, I want to go to A&M. Which I had been thinking about when I was at Whitney Young, but I hadn't really made up my mind. So
okay.
Once I made up my mind on that decision, I went ahead and went to Whitney Young.
That's
I went
okay.
ahead and went to A&M, and I tried, you know, but it was tough for me because at that point, well, looking back now, I realized I was still in the mindset of a young teen. I wasn't at the point of maturity where I was able to be away from school, away from home on my own,
right.
and still be able to take care of everything that I needed to take care of.
Okay. And were you able? Were you able to finish your degree what were you studying, and then did you complete that degree?
First, I started out with political science. Then I switched to electrical engineering.
Oh.
Then I switched again to accounting. But no, I did not finish any of those.
And what made you decide to leave Alabama A&M? You're like, okay, I still have to find my path. Is that kind of how it went?
Yeah, it was at that point when I realized, you know, I have two kids because at that point in time, I had my son and my daughter. And it was rough being a single mom, a student, and working a full-time job. It was kind of rough on me then. So I was like, well, you know, let me take the time to focus on my kids, being that they're still so young.
Sure.
And then I can always come back to school later. So I worked as a server at different restaurants, you know, just so I could make sure that they had what they needed and we could get by. And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm ready to go back home.
Right.
I came back to Chicago because I stayed in Alabama for about nine and a half years.
Okay.
And then finally I was just like, you know what? I got to go home. I got to do it.
And supporting two kids, when did you decide to go to the Kennedy King Community College?
I had been home for about a year.
Uh-huh.
And almost a year, actually. And I realized, you know, this is the time where I can actually complete my education. This is the time where I can show them, being that they're starting to get a little bit older and they're starting to notice things. I would hear them telling me, "Oh, mommy, you work here. I'm going to work there when I get older." And I said, "Okay, they're paying a lot more attention to the things that I do. So now is the time to show them education is important. And you got to stick to it and you got to finish, because if you don't, then you might end up regretting it later on." And I didn't want them to feel the way that I felt, because I did regret not finishing.
Okay.
And now that they've watched me in school, now that they've watched me walk across the stage, they have been so excited about it. The entire time I was at Kennedy King, they've been telling me, "Mommy, I'm going to go to Kennedy King when I graduate." I said, "That's fine. You can go to whatever school you want to." I said, "You always make sure you remember, though, wherever you go, you have to make sure you focus and put your all into it." And I do want them to understand that a lot of people push, you know, going to a four-year institution right away. That's not a big necessity. I feel like Kennedy King was an amazing choice for me, and I feel like it could be an amazing choice for a lot of other students as well, because what a lot of people don't realize about City Colleges is it helps prepare you for that next step. It helps you get to the point you need to be before you take that big leap.
And you're underselling this, by the way, and I mistakenly called Kennedy King a community college. It's the City Colleges of Chicago. You were the salutatorian. Mm-hmm. You graduated number two. Yes. In your class. You didn't just graduate. How did that feel, showing that, giving that sort of, being that inspiration for your kids, being that role model?
It felt absolutely amazing. I definitely was not expecting it at all. So when I got the email, I was like, "Wait, I'm what? You're kidding, right?" Because it was just like, oh my goodness, this is like absolutely amazing. And I was telling my family and my kids, and my kids are like, "What's that?" I'm like, "That means mommy did really, really good." I was like, "So when you go to college, you have to do just like I did." And everybody was like, "I knew you could do it. I knew you could do it." And I'm just like, well, you know, I haven't been in school in a long time, so I definitely wasn't expecting this. I knew I was pushing to keep my GPA. I knew the entire time I was there, I did have a 4.0, but I was pushing to keep that GPA as long as I could. But I wasn't looking for the salutatorian spot. I wasn't expecting it at all, in no way, shape, or form. I was just trying to be the best student that I could be and the best role model I could be.
Well, congratulations. Working, being a mom and a full-time student, rising to the top of your class. How important was it for an institution like the City Colleges to be understanding and supportive of the kind of demands you have on your time outside of school?
You know, to me, it was definitely a big factor in why I decided to attend Kennedy King, because my mom, this is a funny story, but my mom actually went to Malcolm X for a while. She had already graduated from college years ago, before I was born. But she decided she wanted to go back and do respiratory therapy. So she went to Malcolm X, and knowing that is what made me start thinking about Kennedy King. Because when I moved back, I ended up moving to the South Side, and Kennedy King was like 5 minutes away from where I lived. And I said, well, this might be my best shot. This might be the opportunity that I've been looking for. And I know I remember she would always tell me how understanding they were at Malcolm X, of things she was going through, things she was having to deal with. You know, my grandmother was sick and my mom helped take care of her and things of that nature. So I said, well, if they were doing that then, I'm pretty sure that they would be understanding of me and my situation being a single parent. And the teachers and the faculty and staff at the City Colleges, they're all amazing. Like, they go above and beyond for us as students, and I definitely appreciate everything they do for us. I've had some that have pushed me and pushed me and pushed me, and I have friends that have other professors that have pushed them, and it's just like they look for us to succeed and excel in everything we do. And for them to look for that in us, it makes us look for it in ourselves as well.
What an inspiring story. Brianna, I want to say happy Mother's Day to you, and thank you so much for sharing
of
that. And good luck. I know you're going to UIC next, which I love that school.
Yes.
And wish you all the very best.
Thank you so much.
Get some sleep, will you? I know you've been traveling today. Get some rest. Thank you so yes. much, Brianna. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. You have a good night.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. In 1984, Johnny Lawrence from the dojo Cobra Kai faced off against Danny LaRusso, whose sensei, Mr. Miyagi, helped lead him to a championship when he kicked him in the face and knocked him down on the mat. I'm sorry, I got very excited there. I didn't realize until I saw the series Cobra Kai that perhaps there was some controversy over that final kick. Elliot Serrano joins us on the line as a Susan Dannenberger for our weekly segment, Binge and Uncork. And Elliot, did you ever think that kick was possibly illegal, that from the crane? Did you ever think that might have been an illegal kick to the head?
Well, considering at the time I wasn't all that familiar with karate tournaments, no. But then I want to say it was Funny or Die or College Humor. They came out with the video about how Danny LaRusso is the true villain of the Karate Kid, and how Johnny is the hero. And yes, one of the things they point out that the kick to the face was illegal.
I had never heard that before. And somehow, the way this series is written, look, Johnny Lawrence is not redeemed in this series by any stretch of the imagination. But so, Susan Dannenberger, were you as obviously I'm a bit of a crazy fangirl for Karate Kid in particular, Ralph Macchio, who I did have the chance to interview about a year ago, and I pretty much swallowed my tongue the entire time. Susan, what did you think of Cobra Kai on YouTube?
So my empathy changed completely between the characters. You know, the first one, you're like, oh, poor Ralph. And I switched watching the show. They did a great job, the producers and directors, making you feel empathy for the other side of the coin. It was amazing.
Well, if that sounds kind of crazy to people, like, oh, great. The part of it goes all the way back to when Johnny Lawrence is 10 years old, and you find out that his mother married a very wealthy man, played by Ed Asner.
Abusive.
Yeah, very verbally abusive, hostile, nasty, and little Johnny was being beat up in school and found sort of another family at Cobra Kai Dojo. This was Elliot, you know, I dorked out. I had stayed up all night watching like six episodes. And I was messaging you as you were getting ready for work. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Now, Susan, how many of the episodes have you watched?
I'm terrible. I watched all of them.
So
it's so embarrassing.
No, I did too. But it's only half hour episodes. Now, we don't want to spoil anything because there are some really interesting elements to this. And look, they're complicated guys, as we all are. We're not the same way we might have been when we were, 15, 16 years old. Life might not turn out.
And you have families to
yes.
add to it.
Yes.
So it's like very...
I agree.
There's a lot going on.
Elliot, did you get the sense, and this is what struck me, and maybe both of you saw this, I felt as though there was a really kind of very timely message in this. And Johnny Lawrence comes from this sort of get over yourself, basically like everyone's a snowflake that can't handle being called names and in a way you're like, oh, I kind of get that. Right. And he even sees that some of his points are destructive and maybe isn't helpful to the kids. But in some ways, he is teaching these kids who are, with their heads in their phones all the time and allowing kids to bully them. There is a sort of like, get over yourself sense, isn't there, Elliot?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that got me about this show is you keep expecting it to fall into cliches.
Yes.
And just be like, oh, the Johnny Lawrence again, what are you saying? He's a bad guy. He's a product of his time. He can't adjust to today. And the writers even have a little fun with that. They have a little fun with the idea that, he's walking around. He's hitting on women half his age in his beat up Camaro. And, and he can't seem to like pull himself out of his old glory days, of the past. But then he does evolve over time. And even then they're saying, well, maybe a lot of the attitudes that he carries with him from that past time aren't entirely appropriate, but there are elements of it that can translate to modern day.
I agree. I was, I loved this entire series. I watched all 10 as well. Ellie, did you finish all 10?
No, I have yet to get to the big climax, which they've already teased because Cobra Kai season 2 has already been approved.
Yes.
What?
Yes,
yeah.
I was going to tell you that, Susan.
Yeah.
They have approved today, just a few hours ago, they have announced that season 2 will go into production.
I can't imagine where it will go.
Yeah, I know. So here's my thing. I was like Patty. She said, "Okay, you got to watch it. You got to watch it." I started watching it, and then I just it's easy to just rip through all the episodes because they're really a half hour each, and they're like it's almost like a sorbet. You know, you're like, this one's good. I think I have room for a little more.
Exactly.
Right. And then I'm like, but no, I don't want it to end. So
you're holding off. Yeah, I had two in the whole. I saved two of them until I couldn't take it anymore, and I watched the last two. And now, Susan, did you watch this with anybody else in your family? Any of your kids or your husband watch this with you?
My oldest son, Gannon, was talking about it, but he hasn't watched it yet. And
okay.
So everybody thought I was silly. They were all like, oh, yeah, you know, 1984.
Please, believe me, Elliot, I could feel Elliot rolling his eyes at me while he was messaging me back that morning.
I know, and it's true, though. And then, mind you, this show has gotten a lot of positive buzz, and yet... It does have fun with the idea that these are characters from the 80s. I mean, they acknowledge that, and they're always referring back to that time. So it's kind of like when you listen to your grandpa, you know, talking about, well, in my day, you know, you didn't fight Cobra Kai, you know. And so
everybody knows what Cobra Kai is. Everybody's recognizing
everybody knows.
It. It's kind
yeah.
of, yeah.
Yeah. So they do have fun with it, but again, it's smart. So if you watch it, you're going to go, oh, well, that was actually quite clever.
It was. I think, and I also, maybe because I identify with being bullied in grade school, not in high school, but in grade school, when Danny sees Johnny, right? Like, he tries to act like everything's okay, but he's a little triggered. He starts to become obsessed with him and wants him to be miserable and only sees it from the point of view of being that 16-year-old kid, even though he won, right? And in so many ways, you know, on the surface, Danny continues to win in life and he still can't let go of that rivalry with Johnny Lawrence.
Yeah, but well, for me, the big moment was, and I don't want to give away a spoiler because a lot of things do happen that are significant. But there's one moment where Miguel, the kid who ends up being Johnny's protege, well, let's just say his mom calls him by his nickname, the nickname that, you know, Hispanic moms give their sons no matter how old they get.
Yep.
It was the same nickname I had as a kid. I was like, oh, my goodness. That's what my mom used to call me. So I was pretty hooked at that point.
Well, and that's a thing too for me is that as a kid growing up, never seeing very many Latinos that were just, you know, there, right? Experiencing life, you know, rather than being drug dealers or maids, having this family live in the same building with Johnny Lawrence. And he has some ideas about them being immigrants or their nationality or ethnicity. That was I thought that was also for me really so much sweetness in the series. And I'm excited to see that family come back in the season 2. We have to take a break here. We're talking to Susan Danenberger and Elliot Serrano. It's Binge and Uncork. We're talking about the series Cobra Kai. If you've been watching it, give me a call. Or if you think we're just crazy, yeah, that's fine too. We'll take your texts and phone calls at 312-981-7200. And when we come back, we'll find out which wine Susan paired with Cobra Kai. More after this on 720. WGN. The Karate Kid lives on. Actually, the Karate Kids, because the character of Johnny Lawrence is really the eyes into the series on YouTube, and we are talking about it with the remarkable winemaker Susan Danenberger, who joins us on the line, and Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer, who I knew that this would strike a chord for you, because, you know, both of us are products of the 80s, Elliot, and Susan, you as well. We all grew up in the 80s. So there's a lot. There's music. There's the cars. There's this movie. And the flashbacks are fun. I have to address something that neither Susan or Elliot might be familiar with that happened in the earlier show. There's Elliot, you used a word that some of our texters are. I just want to address this. It's not that you did anything, but you used a particular word that also means palate cleanser. Some of our texters are feeling a little bit emotionally scarred. There was a jingle by our Shark Tank Into the Frying Pan guest that Justin Kaufman has, and that he may or may not have been singing it the entire show, and so they're having some residual effects from that. So I do want to extend our warmest wishes for survival and recovery to the 773 and Trucker Jamie, who he said he wants to. I'll tell you about it some other time, Elliot. I don't want to scar anybody else who's trying to erase the jingle from their minds. And I have my
Should I have said there's always room for Jello? Would that
yes? No, wait. Yeah. You know what there's room for? A spectacular wine from Dannenberger Family Vineyards. So I have to find out what Susan paired with the series Cobra Kai.
Well, I had to pair a red because that's what they were drinking. They're all very fancy and they're big, bold glasses of red wine. But I felt like, you know, there had to be a muse. There was always a muse. Ralph Macchio had a muse. Even they all had muses.
Yes.
Something that inspired them. So it had to be muse. It had to be.
So this is the muse. How do I say this?
De Ceris.
And this, okay, well, I'll say, go ahead. You keep telling us about this wine and exactly what the properties of it are, what to expect from it.
It was one of my first wines that I ever made, and it's still wonderful in the bottle. I mean, it's been around for years, and it's just now blowing up as far as the profile. It tastes amazing. And it was one of the first. So it's a Merlot and the Cabernet Franc that comes from this vineyard here in New Berlin. And it was one of my first. It was my muse. It gave me inspiration to kind of develop, you know, that red wine, big, bold profile that I was looking for, and kind of take it slowly and then get people interested in what can happen here and then really make it big.
So now, I see
had to be it.
Part of the description on the label says that it has hints of vanilla and tobacco, plum and cedar and clove. There's a lot going on in this, and oak.
And as it sat in the bottle for the last 3.5 years, it's gotten even bigger and better. But in the beginning, it was kind of, you know, quiet, and it was approachable, and you're like, okay, I don't like a big red, but I want to try red. So you start there, and, you know, the more you taste, the more you're like, oh, I can do this one. This one's not too scary. And so that was my thought. Even with karate, it's the same thing. You're like, I'm afraid to do these big things, but I do want to, you know, defend myself. It's the same kind of idea. Like,
this is lovely. It's lovely, Susan. So good. It's very rich. I mean, I you wouldn't, you know, necessarily think, oh, it's very complicated because of all the things that go into it as far as the elements and the tastes. I love this. So good. It's very, it's just, it's got a roundness to it for me.
So, Susan, I've got to ask.
Nice one.
What was that, Elliot?
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I've got to ask because maybe it's something that is an obvious question or maybe a silly question. But okay, Johnny drinks a lot on this show. On the show, I mean,
he drinks one thing. He drinks one thing in particular out of bottles, which I thought was interesting. It was those squat bottles of Coors? Go ahead.
Coors.
Yeah.
So,
but Ralph Macchio is always drinking red wine.
Hold on.
Wine, right.
Ask your question and then we'll let Susan think about it because I've got to go to a break. Ask your question, Elliot.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so yeah. So, I mean, were you ever tempted to switch over to Coors as, you know, as Johnny was going? Because, you know, it's not always red wine in this one. And I thought you needed to get down and gritty with Johnny for a while.
Let's hold on right there because I have some thoughts on that. A quick break. When we come back, find out more about Cobra Kai on 720 WGN. week, I think it's pretty safe to say that somebody freaks out. It might not be my Freak Out Friday panel. It might not be Ken J. Kupowski, who is the president and CEO of Sirius Enterprises. And it might not be Eric Elk, who is a president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. It might not be Dave Lundy, who is a political strategist. Or, well, more publicity. Oh, I thought I gave you headphones. Here, I'll get you. I'll figure that out, Dave. Dave is also the president of Aileron Communications, and he is a regular on the Justin Kaufman Show. Every Monday night, you can hear him yelling at somebody else. Is there? I would say you freak out a little bit more on Justin Kaufman's show. Would you say, Dave?
This past Monday, yeah. No, my compatriot, Chris Roebling, was insane. He was off his meds.
Come on.
No. I don't mean, and I said this to him on the air, so I'm not saying anything now that I would not say to him to his face, because I said it to his face. I'm like, Justin, we were talking about the Iran deal and Trump's decision to abrogate the Iran deal, which, by the way, amazingly is not on your list of topics.
Yeah, I know.
None of us had that on our list of topics. I had a lot of other things, but that was not one of them. Yes.
Justin was asking a serious question, and Roebling just wouldn't let me get a word in edgewise without being insulting, ad hominem, obnoxious. And it was just like, and I finally turned to him and I said, dude, you're off your meds tonight. Just take a breath.
Wow. Well, that's a...
And he didn't.
It might not be any of us that freaks out tonight or needs meds, but sometimes there's a listener in the audience who gets very passionate about their emotions. So somewhere someone's freaking out about what we're talking about. That's why I thought maybe we would change gears and ease into our conversation tonight about a topic that caught my eye today several years ago when I was sending out a lot of letters and interaction with producers in Hollywood. You know, in L.A., there is a lot of pressure to be younger, to not come across as older, to be under 35. And I found out that if you use two spaces after a period, people who are under 40 think you are old.
See, I don't understand that.
It catches their eye, and they can tell that you're ancient and you're a fossil.
See,
you are no longer functioning in society.
I always thought that it's one space is the rule, and I've been using two spaces for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years because I can see it better. And I just assumed, I've always assumed that I was doing something wrong. I mean, I was, you know, I should be at one and I'm at two, so I'm breaking the rules.
There's a study now that says you're not breaking the rules.
Well, but
I love the study.
I mean, I got to tell you, I've actually gotten into this with Charlie Meyerson, who publishes Chicago's Public Square. Charlie is not young. He's older than we are.
Right.
But he said he has embraced the youth movement and has embraced this notion that you cannot have two spaces. If you have more than one space after a period, you just should be in a home. Yeah. You should be in a home. We shouldn't listen to you. We shouldn't take you seriously.
Exactly.
There's something seriously wrong with you. And these young people, and he's posted various questions about this, and people go bonkers over this thing.
And
guess what? I still use two periods or two space.
I think you create your own genre.
Two periods for space.
But do you do a single space after a comma, or do you do
single space after a comma, two spaces after a period? Is the way I've always.
That's what I do too.
Yeah.
Unless it's in a dollar figure, in which case there's no space after the comma.
So they taught you two spaces in school. See, they taught me one.
Really?
I literally have grown up thinking 1-1-1, and when I started to do two, I said, hey, I could see better. I know it's breaking the rules, but that's okay. So I thought doing two, I was being the outlier. I had no idea that everyone wants to do one. I don't know.
Well, and this makes sense to me. So there's a study there's a journal called Attention, Perception, and Psychophysics, and they say that the data suggests that readers benefit from having two spaces after a period.
You can Hell see it better. Yeah. Yes. You can see it better.
Removing the spaces between words altogether drastically hurts our ability to read fluently, and increasing the amount of space between words help us process the text.
And read more fluently.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, maybe that explains Trump. He always read with one space.
Maybe that was.
Well, that would mean that he was actually reading.
Good point.
By the way, it also increases your reading speed by 3%, which might seem like it's a negligible amount, but I mean,
that's a pretty good number.
I think so too.
So the message to all the young folks out there is respect your elders. Understand, we know we've been around a little longer. We know what the deal is. Follow us. Don't try to lead us.
Here's the thing. I don't notice it in others. I'm just hyper aware of it on myself, right? I'm like, oh, if I do an extra space here, people are going to think I'm old. It's just the way I learned. And it's not just that, by the way. I am, you know, people will text, and I get when texters are sending something into our screen, they're in a hurry, they're on their phone, but you know, it doesn't hurt to take a look at what you just wrote. Like I voice to text. You've probably gotten my voice to text and seen some gnarly stuff and some stuff that doesn't make sense. Michael gets it all the time, and I have to message him right afterwards and say, that was a voice to text. I always correct myself, right? If I use your, like, instead of using possessive your, I mean, like, the, you know, verb, the conjugated verb, I'll edit that. Nobody edits, and then they get mad if you point it out to them. I can't. Yeah, I
do, because I have the exact same issue. You know, I'll do voice to text,
right?
And then if I'm doing it in a place where I can't look at it, and then afterwards I look at it and I'm going, oh my god, how did anybody understand what I just wrote? But when I can, I will always correct it.
Proofread it or correct it.
But the thing is, I'm somebody who actually proofreads my texts before I send them.
I use emails. Grammar and punctuation in my texts.
I don't understand people who don't do that.
I do the exact same thing, and I get frustrated when I do a voice text, because when I read it, most of the time it has absolutely no relationship to anything that I actually said. So I have to go in, I have to change things and add periods, and it becomes more complicated. And I don't know if it's that my voice isn't picked up properly. I don't know if it's just my phone. I don't know what it is, but every time I voice a text, I would say at least half of the stuff is just incorrect.
By the way, we all know that Eric's younger than all of us, because he will respond to anything with instead of okay or yes or sure thing, he responds with a...
K.
Hello. So do I.
Do you really?
Oh, I'm always a K guy.
Do you use a Y for yes?
Wait a minute. Okay. Wait. Yes. The 219 wants to chime in, and so I'm not sure about this. I didn't use a word processor. I went straight from typewriter to computer, so I'm not sure about this. But it says you guys are completely confused about the spaces. When word processors were developed, they automatically made a wider space after a period. In my 40s, oh, this is another one from the 630. I'm in my 40s. Growing up, I learned single space after periods. When I went back to college a few years ago, they said two spaces. Oh, and I'm driving. So yes, all of that, that's a voice to text. Yeah, I hope that was a voice to text.
The confusion, yeah. And I can understand that about the word processors. It just was a one space, but it was a wider one. It could be a wider one space.
I don't know if that's...
I mean, the other day I texted somebody.
But we're completely confused. Just so you know, a sweeping statement about a broad brushstroke about all of us. We are completely confused.
So, well,
mind blown.
But shortly, about 2 days ago, I responded to somebody who asked me, he said, hey, can I do blah, blah, blah? And I sent a Y back, just a Y. Like, yes. He kept saying, he sent me questions, back. And I said, why? He sent me questions back again.
I
said, yes.
He said,
I thought you were asking why.
Yes.
I'm like, no, I'm saying yes.
That is the conundrum over why.
Right.
Yes.
So I've had that happen too.
The 219 continues, in a true word processor, you're going to get a wide enough space after a sentence that reading will be easy, but when texting or using anything that is not a true word processor, it makes sense to use two spaces. So you need to have this conversation in proper context.
I think
the context is nobody uses a word processor anymore.
No, nor look, I grew up in a typewriter.
Me too.
Which was really small. It was very compressed.
I love my typewriter.
It was difficult to live in that typewriter, though. But anyway, so I grew up in a typewriter. And then I, in college, I started using a PC, mm-hmm. and I used Multimate, which was the closest to an actual word processor. I have no idea whether it put two spaces or not. I was taught two spaces.
Exactly. I was taught one. I was taught one.
Well, so you were taught
here,
wrong.
So here to our 219, the context is this is how we were taught.
Right.
So your contention that we're not putting things in context, it's perhaps not in your context, but our context is that's what we were taught.
That's what we were taught.
And so my evolution from single space to two is good.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go. Okay. And yes, Roger, as a teacher.
Being one, a child of a secretary, my mother, who spent many years as a secretary, and I don't have headphones in, so I can't hear, but and having taken a keyboarding class three times in my life and actually being certified to teach keyboarding.
I'm getting context. I'm getting context from Roger.
So I'm getting context, but I'm afraid what's going to come next.
From a manual typewriter, an electric typewriter, a word processor, and a computer, which Microsoft Word is essentially a word processor. So there are two spaces after a period.
The suspense is killing us, Roger.
He said there's two spaces. Definitive statement. There are two spaces.
Yes. Two spaces after a period.
We got context. Yes. We got experience.
Yes.
And we have...
And he's a teacher.
And the son of a secretary.
I'm very
Not only
happy
is he a teacher,
this.
his Twitter handle is TeacherRB.
RB.
Yeah. There you go.
From the 815, single hot chick here. I would never, ever date a man who has typos or misspellings in his profile or texts. I kind of love that about her. All right,
I think little
she's
OCD,
very,
but
she's very smart.
Yeah,
smart. Yeah, it's the little things that speak volumes.
No, I know. Look, I was once interviewing for a position. I don't even remember what I was looking to hire, but somebody sent a resume and talked about their comeupter skills.
The what?
Comeupter skills.
Comeupter.
Did they define that for you?
I assume they meant computer. And I was like, no, really? And just to be clear, I don't mean to insult the person by saying it was OCD. I am highly judgmental about typos. In fact, for my staff, my employees, I go nuts on them when I see a typo. I'm like, you can't do that. We can't send that to a client.
Now, some of the problems, though, are caused by the automatic spell check. They think you're typing a word and it's different, and you'll get halfway through a paragraph or through the paragraph, you go back to reading and go, I didn't type that. Where did that word come from?
I will say this before we go to the break. My autocorrect apparently thinks that I should check my language. So just want to, you know what? I do not spell F with a bunch of asterisks after it. I mean it when I say it, Eric. I'm just saying.
I have a certain word, the word duck comes up a lot
yes.
in my text
box. I'm like, that is not what I wrote. More after this on 720 WGN. We're going to go over the incredible promises that President Trump made during the campaign and see where he is tonight. More after this on 720 WGN. We've struck a chord, ladies and gentlemen. You know, every week we talk about the biggest news stories of the week, but apparently whether or not you use two spaces after a period has caught some people's attention. And also we're getting a lot of texts. I was saying that I prefer to use all the correct grammar. I try to. I aspire to it. How's that, Ken? Even when I do my voice attacks, I will say, hey, talk to you later, period. Hope everything's okay, exclamation point. And,
but when somebody makes a proposal to you and you see a typo, I bet it drives you nuts.
What I do is I'll send an asterisk and pretty much like what I meant to say was. So the 815 says, you are, the letters you are, gonna, H8, how, lowercase I, type, N, I'm, no apostrophe on the I am, over 35. I agree. It's, I don't hate it. It made me laugh. Theodore has something he wanted to add to the conversation. Hey, Theodore, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I was just wondering if you could help me with my English. When I leave a voicemail, when do I pause and how do I put a period in sentence at the voicemail?
If you're like me, you forget that you're leaving a voicemail and not doing a voice to text. So you actually just say it out loud. You say, hey, Theodore, exclamation point. Hope you're having a great day, smiley face. That's how I leave a voicemail.
On.
Thank you,
you
so much.
Not.
No, but that's...
Make sure you leave two spaces after voicemail. Each sentence in the voicemail.
No, but I've actually had to go back. I love now that you can erase your voicemails. You know that you can do that, right?
Yeah.
And so I've accidentally left grammar in a voicemail, forgetting I was not doing a voice to text.
So wait a second. When I text, I use the voice text. I could say exclamation mark, period.
Of course.
Oh, come on.
That's the whole point,
yes.
Ken.
I've said period, and it's actually written the word period before.
Well, then you're not saying it right.
Yes. Period.
No, of course you say exclamation point. You say...
I had no clue.
You really have
you
no...
You know what I've been
given
doing?
Given how much wait, you text...
Wait. Yes, you know what I've been doing?
Oh, my God.
Theodore, look what you did.
I stop, I go in, and I add the period and exclamation point, then I go back
oh, Jesus,
and I leave
Ken.
More.
Yep.
We are now demonstrating our age.
No, we are not. No, we are not. No, Ken.
It's okay, not age-related.
Frankly,
it's just, you know,
I think, Ken, you should say thank you to all of us tonight because we just changed your life.
I may actually be able to do voice text now.
Well, practice saying period.
This is really good because about 80% of my corrections are adding periods, commas, and exclamation marks.
Try it out.
I like that.
I think for period, you have to be emphatic about it. You have to be like, period. I think that's how you get the actual grammar of it. But comma, yeah, it should do comma for you.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Comma. Honestly,
you need to learn how to use this device.
Let me see if
exclamation
it actually did
point.
It. No, come on. All right, send me the text. Let's see if it did it.
Maybe the problem is that your Siri's been hacked, and so somebody's putting goofy things into your text.
Hey, it worked, Dave. It left an exclamation mark.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Oh yes, it's very weird. Wow, look at that. Holy smokes,
Theodore. Thank you so much for calling.
Theodore, I love you, buddy.
You've added to the show immensely. Now, Roger, can you hear me in the newsroom?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Roger, I have a question for you. Okay. I know you're not at the desk that I saw you at when I was there. Can you do me a favor? I need to know what I'm eating.
Those are rice cakes.
No, I grabbed some of those M&Ms, but they're like...
Oh, caramels.
Oh, okay. That's what
I think it said caramel on.
They're way too chewy. I was just like, why?
Yeah, is did I miss those? Where were they?
I thought that I'd gotten like stale.
They were hidden on the desk in there.
They're old.
They're not mine. I was eating the rice cake. She's eating the M&Ms.
They're a little too chewy.
He's got popcorn rice cakes. The popcorn rice cakes are very strong in flavoring. So I took a couple and they satiated my needs. And then I thought I need something sweet, but this is just wrong. Here, try one of these.
You know, I'll get one without the fingerprints on it.
I know, right? I just got out of the bathroom. You want one of these M&Ms? More than this on 720. Yeah, here you go. You want some of these? The 219 joining us in the conversation about whether or not there are two spaces after a period. And thank you, 219. I apologize if I was reading it as a, like, you're completely confused. The thing about when people type, it comes across one way. So thank you so much. The 219 says, I too hate typos and poor grammar. But I've had to embrace that texting is not writing literature for the ages. I understand that. But at the same time, for me, I'm just like, it's painful to my eyes when it's wrong. And I know we have to let it go. So thank you to the 219. The 219 wanted to explain how spacing was handled back in the day when word processors replaced typewriters. And like I said, I jumped from typewriter to computer. I never had my roommate had a word processor, but I never used that. I also... There was something else I wanted to talk about. It's Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah. I need you to help me out. Are you tired? You're just like lounging back
tired.
There.
Yeah.
But you're at the Cubs game today. Did you bring your mom to the Cubs game?
I did not.
Does she like the Cubs games?
Yeah, she likes watching them at home.
All right, that's
fine. In the
fun.
Warmth.
Yeah, that's fair.
Couch.
It was a little chilly.
Yeah.
What are you doing for Mother's Day?
Mother's Day is a little complicated for us because Jen just lost her mom, and her mom had her stroke that led her to the horrible condition she was in for the 5.5 years on Mother's Day.
I'm so sorry.
In 2012. And so Mother's Day, since her mom's stroke, has been very complicated for our family. So we're not actually 100% sure. And so, Mom, I'm sorry. We'll figure it out, but we're not 100% sure. What we're doing.
Best wishes to your entire family.
Yes, and happy Mother's Day to my mom.
Yes,
who I know is listening.
Can we call her Mama Lundy? Is that too weird?
You can. It's a little weird.
Okay. Mama Lundy.
Mama Lundy. You know, no.
That sounds Italian, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds a little. All right.
Mom, text me. Oh wait, no, never mind.
All right. Your preferred address. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Ken, what are you doing for Mother's Day?
Well, first, happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you. Cheers.
What are you doing?
I am going to see Infinity War this weekend. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, a friend of mine who works for the State Department, who is coordinating some of the details for the meetings with North Korea and South Korea and China, she cannot make it home. Her mother is battling dementia, and neither her nor her sister can make it back to Chicago, so my mom and I are going to go visit with her mom.
Oh, that's nice.
So I'll do something a little bit different for Mother's Day to a mom who, you know, obviously raised two remarkable young women, and want to go hang out with her.
Wow,
and spend
that's
time
really
with her.
Nice.
Yeah, we're going to do something low key, and I'm not sure what that is yet. We did go out and get gifts, so there are gifts for Mother's Day.
That's very nice. And don't tell us what they are because she might be listening.
She might be listening, and mm-hmm. Of course, I want to say happy Mother's Day to my mom. Mom, I will call you tomorrow. I know she's listening. She actually will be listening in Detroit.
Does Mama Jacobowski work for her? No, I'm Mama. I'll be Mama Vasquez.
I would call her Mumsy.
Mumsy Jacobowski.
Really?
Just Mumsy.
Mumsy.
Well, why doesn't your mom call my mom and they can kind of decide what they want to be called on the air?
There was a time when Griffin used to call
me. Great radio.
Griffin used to call me. He used to call me Mama. It's not a very French. Mama. Mama. I was like, what phase are you going through?
Was that a joke?
No, he was like six. He might have been joking, but it was he likes picking up accents on things that he watched. But he said, Mama.
When do I get my polo lessons?
Mama, bring me a pony.
Eva does something similar to that to Julie. It's not quite French like that, but it's a mama. And I kind of like the way it sounds. It's kind of cool.
Well, your mama's mumsy. I'm mama. And Eric, what are you doing for Mother's Day?
I think that me and Kim will probably go visit my sister, her sister, and sister-in-law, and spend some time with family over the weekend.
Well, happy Mother's Day to all the moms in your life. One of the aides for Declan said happy Mother's Day to me, and I paused because it's presumptuous of me to say happy Mother's Day to you as well. And I said, are you a mother? Which is weird because, like, what if she's not? But she was. And so
that would be an awkward moment.
It would be an awkward moment. Roger, what are you doing for Mother's Day?
Working.
Okay.
Yeah. No, Bridget and I already went out and got her a very nice Mother's Day gift already.
Wonderful.
The girls are going to take her out. So we've got two mothers.
Right.
Our daughter and Bridget. And they're going to, I think they have plans for a 6 o'clock dinner somewhere.
It's going to be a surprise.
Well, I mean, it's on the calendar. So 6 o'clock, Sarah and the girls.
That reminds me. I need to make reservations for me and my mom. I want to take her out for seafood.
Where are you going to go?
I haven't decided. I don't want to tell people because,
I know where.
First of all, no, because I don't want the reservations to fill up. Yes. Yeah. Where do you think?
Well, I think the reservations may be tight, but if I talk to him, and you've had him on your show.
Oh, Folstrom's is great.
No, not that.
Via
Veneto.
Oh,
awesome
that's a
seafood.
Really good
he
idea.
He has great seafood, and he has Mother's Day reservations.
Do you know if they have oysters over there?
Yes, I think they do.
I have a hankering for
they
oysters.
They have tons of seafood.
Okay. Yeah. I like the cut of your jib.
There you go. Like a
all sailor. Right, then. By the way, someone just texted me from the 224. Are you my mummy? by the way, we're still getting texts about grammar.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Well, here's the thing. It's not that I proofread. Hold on a second. This is a long one. I am all about English usage, spelling, and punctuation. I went to a Catholic grade school and high school starting in the 50s. I was a secretary and then a paralegal until 2008. I would never use autocorrect or the shorthand people use in texting, such as you are, the letters U and R for... Oh, I have a problem with that, too, Dave. I like using entire words instead of U, R, or K, and I'll accept it... Eric, but you'll notice that I never respond back.
I'm usually on the fly, though. I use text as just like
two letters. How hard are two letters?
But Patty, I guess
okie dokie.
You're just not as cool as Eric.
I guess not. Cool. How about cool?
Cool.
I have people write cool with no L.
You're just as cool.
I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
I would, amazingly enough, my three children, ages 42, 47, and 52, also text and write perfect English. Also, it annoys me greatly when people, mostly under age 40, don't pronounce words correctly or wrong tense or frequently say me and instead of and I. Mostly people under 40 are getting very sloppy in the language. It drives me nuts. Plus, oh my goodness, I love a 630.
OMG? Was there an OMG in there?
No, they are not. She's not using
that
an OMG.
That would not be okay for her.
I'm loving everything that you're writing. The problem is I'm getting it out of order, so that's why I sound a little bit...
Disjointed?
Disjointed, yes.
Well, I want to know what words she's saying that people under 40 mispronounce.
Well, here's the thing. I know that there are words I mispronounce, and people will text me about it. Like, I never knew that I was saying jewelry wrong. Mm-hmm. Jewelry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jewelry.
Linger there for a moment. Now I'm not sure which way is correct.
Jewelry?
Jewelry.
Jewelry.
Yeah, jewelry.
Wait. I think that's wrong.
I just know I put the Jew in jewelry.
Oh,
hey.
What? By the way, 630, happy Mother's Day. They're going to the Cubs game. 630 is going to the Cubs game. That's fantastic. And
when?
Then Lou Malnati's afterwards.
On Mother's Day?
On Mother's Day. Well, I don't know about it. It's on Mother's Day, but that's part of the celebration.
Yes.
Excellent. I'm okay, so I
Oh my
This combo is so cool.
Koo.
But no, Koo is K-E-W-L.
That so drives me
that,
nuts.
I don't get. Now you're using as many letters, so they're trying to, they're cool.
Why not just write the...
Ken's very confused right now, by the way, and I'm enjoying it immensely.
Cool. I'm wondering if you can do this verbally on a text, all these things.
I don't know. Can you say cool and have it spelled correctly on your voice to text? We'll try it during the break.
I can't even say Ken and have it spelled correctly. Yeah, it came out can.
Can.
I can imagine. I can imagine. All right. So before we take a break, let me read off the promises that President Trump made during his campaign.
That bulleted list is not the one that Shade is referring to. If you read the whole article.
It's not.
No, it's not. Those are just reforms that he promised.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. So this might be where Piso 630 says that they're waiting in their driveway listening to this conversation. This is where we start to lose people. Okay. Let me say this. If you are burned out on conversations about our administration, we try to make it a little bit different. We come at it from a bipartisan. What is it about? Eric, we don't make it different?
No, I'm raising my hand.
You're burned out?
Eric is the different?
No, I'm burned out.
I'm burned out, too.
I thought you were a liberal loser.
Well, you are such a liberal loser, NRA card holder. Do you have an NRA card?
I do.
All right, then.
I have just for years.
So have you genuflected to the picture of Ollie North?
Wow. That's go to WGNRadio.com.
For those who are watching TV, watching us on television, got the answer on that.
Are we on video?
Ken is practicing his sign language.
No, Eric.
Eric is practicing. Yes. No, you're trying to learn his sign language.
No, I understand that sign language.
Yeah, that is not a bird.
I understand.
That is not a bird. That is not a bird.
Eric now realizes that in addition to being a Republican who has to defend Trump, he now has to defend Ollie North as an NRA member.
And I can
have
fun, Eric.
I will not.
My response to Eric would be, that's right. The NRA is number one, too.
Yes, Ollie North, who called the Parkland kids who are, called them criminal civil terrorists.
You are jumping topics.
Right. Sorry.
We were going to go
Ollie
to the
North
promises.
Ollie North was not a promise that Donald Trump
made. Before we go to the break, from firefighter Todd Chuchuk, a correct pronunciation of often. Do you guys say often? Do you pronounce the T? Anybody?
Often.
Oh, no.
No, I'm kidding.
No.
Can you reach across and hit him?
Silent or not? I say the T is silent.
The T is silent. Of course,
the T is silent.
Just like in comptroller, the P is silent. Controller.
Often.
Often.
No, it's not often. It's often.
Ken.
I mean, I'm often.
Often.
What are you off 10? If you're off 10, it's 9 or 11.
Do you?
No, you're not saying O F F T. It's just.
Do you say often? Do you often say often, or do you often say often?
I say often.
Ooh, there you go.
Thank you.
There you go. Often. So there you go, Todd.
Wait, it's 4-2.
It's 4-2.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
I think it depends on who you're talking to, right? If you're giving a speech, you're going to say often. You're going to.
No.
No, you're not.
I have.
Are you talking to linguists?
I often say mumsy.
If you're giving a speech and you've got the cameras rolling, you want to pronounce things the way you think it should
be pronounced. Do you also say, when you are fighting with the Musketeers, do you also say sword?
Sword.
No,
I'm going to stab you with my sword.
But that's not how the sound SW is pronounced.
You don't say sword?
No, it's sword.
Then why do you say often?
I swore I would never say sword.
Also, Todd says, now this is regional. There are people who put R's in places they don't belong, like Warsh.
Warsh.
Yeah.
Yes. Warsh. Well, like Donald Trump. Rusher.
He does. He says Rusher.
And apparently.
What does he mean when he says Rusher?
And Gina. Gina, more after this on 720 WGN. The calls are coming in. We're all in trouble. The texts continue to come in. Now we are talking about the word often because Eric Elk contends that the T is in fact not silent. The count now is, I believe, 3,000-2. You and Michael. Well,
plus I have an expert opinion to offer here.
Oh, come
on. That was dictionary.com.
Michael's like, I could have gotten that for you,
and
too.
The Oxford English had a pump Dictionary right says both pronunciations are acceptable, but often is more common.
And those of us who value being more common would prefer often.
And Trucker Jamie, you have a third now. Trucker Jamie says off 10. So Trucker Jamie agrees
well,
with you,
Eric.
Well,
he would be correct.
So 3,000-3.
630 says a T is silent.
And he would be correct.
Okay, right, but I have a question to 630.
Yes.
My question to 630 is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how crazy does it make you when people use more than when they mean over or over when they mean more than?
I'm going to need that in a sentence.
The helicopter is hovering over the building. There are more than 50 people in attendance.
Yeah, but how do you misuse more than in place
because
of...
Because people say there's over 50 people in attendance.
And that's not correct.
It drives me nuts.
More than. There's more. Oh.
Over can't be associated with a number.
Numerical. Right. Okay.
You're hovering over, like literally, like
interesting.
Over.
Yes. I shall eliminate that
I
from any future...
I will bet you the 630 will agree with us on this one.
I now that I've heard it out loud, and I'm sure that I've said it...
And you hear this mistake everywhere. Networks. Everywhere.
Oh, yeah. More than.
It's in everything.
Well, and it got so bad...
I am over talking about whether more than is appropriately used. I'm sorry, what?
It got so bad that one of the dictionaries... AP Style. AP Style finally gave in on this particular issue on the over versus more than.
Which is crazy.
I'm like, stop degrading our language.
Yes.
By the way, there's a third way to say often.
Yeah, third way?
Yeah.
Oh, often?
No.
Oh.
A lot.
Okay, now.
Frequently?
Hold on. Nope. We have to go back to a lot. Now, you brought up an argument that I had in high school.
A space L-O-T?
No! You can do it.
A-L-O-T.
You both are acceptable.
Right.
No, it's A space L-O-T.
It's a lot.
Well, it's
is it one word or two?
Lot. Two words is a lot. Where? Where is the lot?
Yeah, it has to be one word.
I think
it can't be two words. Otherwise,
because
you're talking about a lot.
But like lot is a can be defined as a measurement, and it can also be a location.
So you wonder if Donald Trump ever goes to these exercises when he's, when he's in the Oval Office before a speech.
Well,
I say we have more than 4 million immigrants coming over the border, or is it over there?
I will allot you this.
Well, they're coming over the border, so it must be... never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's apparently arguments about the word a lot. By the way, oh my gosh, the text key, the 630 says I could discuss correct English usage, spelling, and punctuation forever. Don't even get me started. Well, we already did.
Okay, but I would like to. I asked the 630 question on a 1 to 10 scale. How crazy does it make you when people misuse those?
I'm guessing crazy.
I'm guessing crazy.
And by the way, 630 says, I will only use Merriam-Webster Dictionary, no other. The 708 says, when there is an E at the end of a word that people want to pronounce the E and isn't supposed to be pronounced, we always joke and say it's silent, like the E in fish.
I just got rid of my thesaurus and my dictionary. And a couple of other books, reference books.
Why? Like, are you trying to deprive your...
They took up a lot of space. And my wife said, why do you have those? It's all online. You don't need the Webster's Dictionary physically.
There's
it's
something
online.
For me about still...
let's flip into that book.
Ken, I'm calling DCFS.
Well, I need to get... what I needed to get is a more updated Webster's. This is like from 1980. So I need to go and buy the most recent version.
I feel like the textures continue to push us toward grammar so that I won't get to this list of the populist promises that President Trump constantly talked about during his campaign.
You often go off on a tangent and detour.
I know.
And
I feel
more often than not.
I feel like my audience knows that more often. Are you over it yet?
No, he's not.
Okay, so today President Trump announced the plans to help bring down prescription medication costs. And during his campaign, he said that there had to be a way to negotiate the price of prescription drugs through Medicare. So that because the government purchases so many medications, that this was going to be one way. And this was something where he was aligned with Democrats. This is something that they were trying to do. Did he end up doing that? Was that the plan?
No, not so much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, look, the lobbyists, including, let's see, what was the name of that pharma company? Novartis.
Oh.
Was definitely opposed to his doing that. So were pretty much every other pharma lobbyist in D.C.
So the plan is to allow, it's basically competition. He's saying that competition and transparency will drive down the price of prescription drugs. So everybody good luck with that.
Yeah, no,
okay.
That's not how that works. No, you need, the government, this is what's so crazy, because Donald Trump always is like, our leaders are so stupid. How do they not know how to negotiate? Except the one thing he won't negotiate is the thing that affects every single one of us, which is the price of prescription drugs.
Well, the reason why he came out with this approach is because he discovered that Barack Obama favored the Medicare approach. So he's not going to do anything that Barack Obama wanted to do. So he's going the other direction.
Well, in fairness, this is the swampiest of the swamp things
Correct.
In Washington, which is the control that that the farmer lobby has on Democrats and Republicans. And this is not a Republican.
But the nice thing
problem.
Is the crocodiles have like gold caps on their teeth. I'm saying the crocodile, the swamp has crocodiles
that are really making a lot of money. So
I mean, like
gold caps over their teeth.
Yeah, on their
and they have more than how many teeth?
And they have all the teeth.
And there's
they
certain lobbyists who are making a lot of money.
But is Michael Cohen a lobbyist?
$100,000 a month from
yeah, but
client.
Michael Cohen's he made over what was it $4 million on just saying that I'm that in with the president
that we know of
Well,
you know,
Michael Avenatti keeps hinting that there's more.
Oh, and yes. there's a guy I want just gone. I am tired of Michael Avenatti. I'm sick of him. Every time I see my TV, I have to turn the television on.
You know,
I want more Michael Avenatti.
I got to tell you something. Here's what's going to happen. Not only is there going to be more, this guy's going to get his own show.
Oh, yeah.
People are in love with him. There's a whole, like...
I will not watch. Ken, I'm tired of Michael Avenatti.
You're in the minority.
There's a very strange thing. As a woman, I will say that we have some odd proclivities. I don't know if you know about the series Lost in Space, but
yes,
there are women who are the new series, the updated version of it, the original version. There are women who are losing their minds over how hot the robot is because he has a nice tuchus. Yes, there. So. In the same vein,
okay,
there are women
weird.
Who are losing their minds over how hot Avenatti is. And he is going to get his own show. I don't know what network it's going to be on, but he's going to get his own show.
He used to work for Rahm Emanuel?
Yes, I didn't know that.
But so here's the thing about Michael Avenatti. I was saying the exact same thing last Monday. I was Avenatti'd out.
He ain't going nowhere.
And then he dropped that bombshell.
Yeah, but I'm just tired of him dropping bombshells.
Oh, my God.
I'd like him to just leave the stage for a little while. Then you can come back in a bit.
I want to come out of the bunker. That's all. Stop dropping bombshells or just poop. More to this on 720 WGN. I think that our listeners are trying to divert us from political conversation on this lovely Friday evening / Saturday morning. Tucker Jamie says one of the things that bugs him is, here's a phrase he doesn't like. What did you do that for? Rather than why did you do that? Because he also hates sentences that end in a preposition, which, by the way, they're saying that for writers, that's actually they're kind of bending the rules a little bit.
See, again,
okay.
They're degrading the language.
I know.
No, it's called putting an artistic flair to language.
Well,
mimicking,
yes.
Using the word "and" to start a sentence,
and
having it be a one sentence
and
paragraph.
Comma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get away with that.
It's also Chicago. My dad ended every sentence with a preposition. Where's the party at? Who you going with? What time are you back
What are you doing that for?
Hey, what are you doing that for? Exactly. What are you doing that for? Although one of the things my dad would say that I later realized, I don't think he knew what he was saying. He would say, what are you doing? Playing with yourself? I don't know how to answer that question. Do you want me to say yes? Because this could be really awkward really fast, Daddy. Really, really fast. Okay.
I
grew up in a household that was politically divided. My mother is a lifelong Democrat. My father was a lifelong Republican. For the most part, he started out, his candidate that he loved was Adlai Stevenson. Back in the 50s? Did he run against Eisenhower, I believe?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was my dad's last Democrat that he voted for until he passed away. And then, I went back and forth. I was always listening to both my parents. I was influenced by them. I always wanted to vote on the issues and to the candidates that I wanted to pay attention to the candidates that I thought would do the better job. So in 2000, during the 2000 election, my candidate actually originally was John McCain. I thought that he had a compelling story. I appreciated his message. And he ended up losing for a very strange reason. I always thought it was the push polling in South Carolina. And Dave, you want to explain to people what push polling was is?
Push polling is when they say it's a poll, but what they're really doing is conveying information that's trying to persuade you, and then they will ask you the question. But they don't really care about the answer. They're not really trying to get an actual survey done. They're trying to pretend like this is a fact, and you are supposed to internalize this as if it is a fact, and then judge the candidate as a terrible, horrible human being.
Ken, do you remember what the push polling was in South Carolina and how that affected the primaries and John McCain's candidacy?
I do remember this. Yeah. I mean, look,
what they did was they would call and say, how would you feel if a candidate had an affair with a black woman and yep. had an illegitimate child. So that when you would see John McCain on the dais or on stages or campaigning with a child who was darker skinned, you would think, oh, that's what they mean by that. He has an illegitimate child with a black woman. And in fact, he had adopted a daughter who was Indian. And that had an effect on people's, and it was using racism in such a base and nasty way. And by the way, this makes a lot of sense now when we see what the Russians did with our elections, and all the ads are coming out now. What they bought on Facebook, they manipulated people who hated Black Lives Matters, right? So they would show the Beyonce thing. People who were angry at Beyonce for some protest that she did, they wanted to do rallies against her. Police weren't going to do any protection for her because she was anti-police, and none of that was true. It was all generated and ginned up by Russians. And the same thing for the protests in Ferguson. Like they were making it seem like there were black people who were being paid to be there, or they were just there to cause chaos. And so we were manipulated very easily.
People like my friend Mr. Roebling, who bought into all of the things you're just talking about.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, I'm guessing he probably posted that picture with Hillary Clinton with the big X through her face and all the horrible things that she did.
Oh, sure.
And, yeah.
You know, in mentioning both of these issues, the push polling and the Facebook ads, why can't we be better citizens and just be smarter about this? It's the Russians took advantage of our, I guess you could say, we as a people are just simply asleep at the switch.
Right.
We're lazy.
Well, and for people,
we don't do our research. We don't look it up. We rely on sources that are not reliable.
When you see a meme, all it takes is a quick Google search. You can find more than one, and try to find things that aren't always, like, don't go to just Occupy Democrats or the National Review. Go to other sources. Look for a couple of them that you know might have done some journalistic work on this.
I always do that.
I
will never post.
Just Google.
I will never post one of those things that looks like, wow, this really validates everything I believe. And so I'm sure it's true. I'm just going to post it from Daily Kos.
Yeah, I mean,
you will never catch me doing that.
And Eric, I would think you would agree with this. I mean, for people who refer to the New York Times, for example, or the Washington Post, but in particular the New York Times is that left liberal leaning paper and I can't trust anything in it. They were more critical of Hillary than Trump. In October and November of 2016, the stories that they kept running on her email stuff was unbelievable. It was like, enough already. It's a nothing burger story. And they kept driving it and driving it and driving it. And then CNN would pick it up and MSNBC would pick it up from the Times lead. And I think there's no question it hurt her.
Yeah, no, look, two things I'd like to say really quick. And that is, I've sent you all numerous articles from New York Times. I look at the Times every day. There are conservative writers at the Times. Brett Stevens is a conservative writer. David Brooks, University of Chicago guy.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant guy.
Really good guy. So I think there are a number of places that I like to go and get my in news. But I also think that people need to remember, as Americans, we're all in this thing together. In this big experiment,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's not about, you know, we have to sometimes take a step back, and it's not about Republicans, it's not about Democrats, it's not about red or blue. You know, we're in this together as Americans, and as upset as people get, or disgusted, or feeling helpless about Trump's actions and vile assaults on some of our institutions. Remember that this fight that we are having is with a reality TV clown.
There you go.
Well,
let me I have to go to a break, but we'll come back. But to the 740, oh no, I'm sorry, to the 773, first of all, I'm not sure why you needed to take the Lord's name in vain. That seemed unnecessary. But listen, the Russians didn't do anything concerning anything about the elections. I'm not saying, and did not say that the Russians affected the elections directly. I'm not saying that, I have no evidence of that. However, they manipulated emotions by all the advertisements they bought on Twitter and on Facebook and posting in bots. That's a conversation that we were having, that people in the same way that push polling affected the election in 2000. And the reason I was talking about John McCain is, in fact, really preying on people's fears, their racism, and their base emotions. Yes, Ken?
Can we come back to this right after the break?
Absolutely. More after this on 720 WGN. By the way, to the, let's see, the 773, in this sense, saying God damn it is a biblical saying as God bless. But some may say to me the reason why this is a violation of the third commandment is because people are using the God's name in a vain, worthless, or empty way. God gives his name to Moses in the book of Exodus. His name is Yahweh. So just to answer your concern, yes, you are taking the Lord's name in vain because you're using it in a worthless and unnecessary way in this context. So if you want to go to grammar, I will play this game. How are you doing, Dave Lundy? Yes.
I'm better now that my mic is on.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Patty. I'm often struck by that.
There you go. So from the 773, I'm sorry, you'll have to clarify. They have a question. What are your reliable sources for information? Because it's all a mess. I'm not sure if it's for grammar, if it's for the biblical conversation that I just shared.
AP style book?
AP style book. Is it? You'll have to be more specific and share that with us.
This gets into the whole question of what Trump has been doing on the fake news nonsense. And by the way, this is also not on the list of topics, but Trump confessed this week a really important confession in a tweet when he wrote, something about 91% of the news is negative, according to a nonsense study. And then in paren, after he wrote news is negative, he wrote fake news.
Right. So if it's negative
so
toward
it's negative,
him.
It's fake, which is, of course, what we've always been saying.
Yes.
You claim it's fake news just because you don't like it.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry, no likey. That doesn't mean no truey. And the answer to the question for the 773 is, what do we use as reliable sources? The news media is not fake. Most of the news media has to go through rigorous processes before they release stories. You can check it out. When you see something that's got a lot of sourcing and several people there, it's probably true. And by the way, so many times Trump goes off on a rant and says this was not true, this was made up. Like the time he said that the news media reported that McMaster was on his way out. He says, not true, I have a great relationship with McMaster. A week later, he was gone. Or the time he said that his legal team was about to change, and he said, no, I love my legal team, and then a week later they were gone. So spare me the you can't trust the news media when 98% of the time what they're telling you checks out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say they don't get it right every time.
No, of course not.
I mean,
and when they make mistakes,
they
acknowledge them.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to, I mean, but a lot
I'm still
of times,
waiting for Trump to acknowledge any mistake.
No retractions from
you know, a
President
lot of times,
Trump.
Dave, I'm sure you've had clients, I have, where you, Ken, you have, where you have to push to get a retraction or a correction.
Absolutely.
But it's kind of on you to kind of read that, follow it, and ask for it. It's, you know, it, especially in this day and age where a lot of these reporters or journalists have to churn out and fill a lot of content.
Well, and I think this whole coverage of the Mueller investigation has been a good exercise for people to follow and develop an understanding of how to actively read the leaks. It is perfectly appropriate. Dave, Eric, and I often will call each other and say, okay, did you see the story in the Times? Wow, it's a blockbuster. Who do you think leaked this and what were their motives? That's right. A very fair question.
Yeah.
The newspaper got the story right, but who leaked it? And a newspaper will not just publish something because somebody calls them and says, hey, here's some information. They check it, they double check it, they triple check it, and then it goes in the paper. We've all tried to get stories in the paper on single source. It doesn't work.
So one of the stories I think that caught a lot of attention and a disappointment and people want to know really who is setting the tone in the White House. Apparently during a meeting, a closed door staff meeting Thursday, an aide for President Trump said the opinion of John McCain does not matter because he's dying anyway. So when you have someone who runs for the highest office in the country and for the one of the most powerful jobs in the world, and they say during the campaign, during sit-down interviews, not just once but several times, that John McCain was not a hero because he got caught, made fun of John McCain because he cannot raise his arms past a certain point in his body because he was actually sustained. He actually sustained many injuries while he was a prisoner of war. Eric, who sets the tone in the White House? And how surprising is it that somebody in the White House said it doesn't matter what John McCain says, he's dying anyway? His opinion on the treatment of prisoners of war makes no difference.
I think not only this woman, this Kelly Sadler, and the retired Air Force Lieutenant General who is out speaking on behalf of the administration and said something
on Fox,
repulsive. I think that, you know, you look at this, John McCain has served his country honorably. Unfortunately, this is an example of why Trump would not be invited to McCain's funeral upon his passing.
And apparently is not on the list.
Correct.
Mike Pence is, but not Trump.
He shouldn't be either. McCain are complete opposites. Trump has lived his every day of his life to enrich himself, while McCain has lived every day of his life in service to others.
I think that's a great point.
I think he served his country honorably through torture, pain. He kept the faith. And I think that this is completely wrong. And the fact that this woman still has her job is amazing to me.
Let's go to the news in a moment. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll hear from Roger.
Live from Chicago, Illinois, here is another episode of
What's That From?
That's right. We are going to take a classic movie and tear it to shreds with our own interpretation. And when you know what movie we have destroyed for you irrevocably. I'm not going to try using that word.
Irrevocably?
No, can't do it. Adirondack. I can say Adirondack, but I can't say.
Irreparable harm?
Irreparable harm. I enjoy that very much.
You know, you often get that wrong.
Oh.
Ooh.
A lot.
When you know what's that from, give us a call at 312-981-7200, and you will win a gift card from Apt Electronics. Pleasing people since 1936. You can visit their store in Glenview or online at abt.com. All right, take it away, everybody.
Interior cabin one, nighttime. Gorman places suitcase on the bed and goes to the window and opens it.
Stuffy in here. Well, the mattress is soft, and there are hangers in the closet and stationery with Shake's Motel printed on it in case you want to make your friends back home envious. And the... over there...
He points to the bathroom, fairly blushes.
The bathroom.
Quickly starting to leave.
I'll be in the office if you want anything. Just tap on the wall.
Thank you, Mr. Shake's.
He pauses at the door, gazes at her, smiles.
You have something most girls never have.
I have.
There's no name for it, but it's something that puts a person at ease.
Thank you. Again.
Not really a question. You're not going to go out again and drive up to that diner, are you?
No.
Then will you do me a favor? Will you have supper here? I was just about to, myself, nothing more than some sandwiches and a lot of milk, but... I'd like it if you'd come up to the house, and I don't set a fancy table, but the kitchen's awful homey.
I'd like to.
All right. You get your dresses hanging out and change those wet shoes, and I'll come for you as it's ready with my trusty umbrella.
Sherry closes the door, goes to her suitcase and opens it, starts to take out a dress. Her handbag is next to the suitcase. She glances down into it, pauses, drops the dress, reaches into the handbag, takes out the money-filled envelope, stares at it, almost with regret. Phil contemplates hiding it, decides to start looking for a reasonable hiding place. She looks about at the closet, the drawers, realizes all such places are obvious. Suddenly, the quiet is shattered by the shrill, ugly sound of a woman's voice, raised in anger.
No! I tell you no!
Sherry walks slowly to the window, realizing that the terrible voice is coming from the house behind the cabins. The camera follows her to the window, and once there, we see the light is still on in the upstairs bedroom, and the voice is coming from that room. The rain has stopped, and the moon is out.
I won't have you bringing strange young girls in for supper!
by candlelight, I suppose, in the cheap erotic fashion of young men with cheap erotic minds.
Mother, please!
And then what? After supper, music, whispers?
Mother, she's just a stranger, hungry, and the weather's bad.
Mother, she's just a stranger. As if men don't desire strangers, as if, oh, I refuse to speak of disgusting things because they disgust me. You understand, boy? Go on, tell her she'll not be appeasing her ugly appetite with my food or my son. Or do I have to tell her because you don't have the guts? Huh, boy? You have the guts, boy?
Shut up!
There is the sound of a door closing that room up there. Sherry has stood by the window listening with mounting distress and concern and sympathy. She turns her face away now, gazes sadly at the little empty room. In a moment, there is the sound of the house's front door slamming shut. Sherry turns and looks out the window. From Sherry's viewpoint, we see Gorman coming down the path, carrying a napkin-covered tray. Interior cabin one, nighttime. Sherry looks at him for a moment, then turns quickly, goes to the door, opens it, and goes out onto the porch. Motel porch, nighttime. Sherry pauses outside the door, is about to start forward when Gorman comes around the building and walks along the porch past the office, stopping only when he is close to her. He stares with painful embarrassment at the knowing look in her eye.
I've caused you some trouble.
Mother, what's the phrase? She isn't herself today. I think that's it.
You shouldn't have bothered. I really don't have that much of an appetite.
Gorman flinches, realizing she has heard his mother's reference to Sherry's appetite.
I'm sorry. I wish people could apologize for other people.
Don't worry about it. But as long as you've made us supper, we may as well eat it, huh?
She begins to back into her room. Gorman starts to follow, hesitates as he sees the total picture of an attractive young woman in a motel room. Bringing down the tray of food in defiance of his mother's orders is about the limit of his defiance for one day. He cannot go into Sherry's room.
It might be nicer, warmer in the office.
Without waiting for approval or disapproval, he turns, hurries to the office. Sherry looks after him, her face showing amused sympathy, then follows.
Ah! And that is our Mother's Day
Those are gunshots.
Special.
Oh, my gosh.
Paula, what's that from?
Oh, the mother of all mothers, Psycho.
Yay! Congratulations, Paula. I'll actually give you a choice. Would you rather have a Lou Malnati's gift card or an Apt Electronics gift card?
Oh, the Apt.
Ah, excellent. Hold on the line, and we will get that right off to you. Okay. You know what?
Really well done, by the way.
We did our
Thank
best.
You.
I believe the role of mother was my favorite. I'm sorry. I don't mean to diminish what you accomplished there,
No,
Dave.
No. Today, mother stole the show. No
I believe.
As is appropriate for Mother's Day.
Paula, did you think that was part mother, part drill sergeant?
I wasn't sure how to play it, so I went all the way.
Yeah, boy. Paula, what are you doing for Mother's Day?
Probably staying home and just relaxing.
You and I should watch. I'm going to watch Psycho, and I think I'm going to watch maybe Mommy Dearest and Aliens. Those are the three Mommy Day movies I'm going to watch.
That sounds very warm and romantic.
It does, doesn't it? Happy Mother's Day, Paula. Have a great weekend. Judy, because you hung on, I'm going to ask you, what was that from?
Oh, absolutely Psycho.
I happen to have a Lou Malnati's pizza. See, all those folks hung up, and I don't blame them because they were like, oh, I didn't win, and I apologize to all the people. I should have said something. I have extras. What are you doing for Mother's Day, Judy?
Probably just trying to rest a little more than usual.
Excellent. Well, there's going to be a Lou Malnati's gift card on its way to you. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Excellent.
You too.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun. I actually realized I've never seen Psycho. I've
Me
seen
neither.
What? I've seen this the sequel.
What? Soko?
No.
Wacko.
I've seen the hotel.
Loco.
Oh, the
you seen the Spanish language
on the
version,
Universal
the
tour.
Loco.
And the Universal tour, they'll say up there. See that up there on that little hill? That is the hotel.
Well, and people love the series Bates Motel. It's supposed to be right. An excellent series, but I have not watched that either.
No, I've Patty. I've never seen Psycho either.
I don't. It's probably something we should watch. I feel like culturally that.
Maybe we should watch it together.
Wait, now have you seen it?
No.
Ken?
No.
Eric? No.
Never.
Wow.
Okay, so Eric, Patty, and I will watch Psycho.
The
Ken
original.
Ken will watch Star Wars.
Yes, I'll watch
Deal.
Star Wars.
Eric, you can go ahead and read that text from our friend in other places.
So our friend Wally texted in, said he is listening this morning in Stockholm, Sweden.
Oh.
And that we sound
great.
Yay! Way thank you, Wally. That's
Wally, how are you, buddy?
Now, I think I'm going to go. I actually think I'm going to watch Psycho tonight. I think I'm in the mood for it. Seems like a good Mother's Day movie. I did watch a movie this week, actually on Sunday. My friend Heather and her kids had never seen Star Wars, and I realized that we can actually not sit down with Ken and watch Star Wars. It's impossible. I don't know how Ken's going to see it, unless we can go to a movie theater, unless we can watch it on the big screen, where no one can. I mean, Ken, I'm guessing if we were sitting down in here, let's say we watch Star Wars in this room, would you be able to just like watch it and enjoy it? Or are you the kind of person that has questions? Like, why is that droid able to move through the sand? And
with 25 minutes left in a show, I'll walk in and say, oh, who is that guy? Tell me, what is he doing? Why is he acting like this? No, no.
Yeah,
I'm always thrown out of the room.
Ken, so this is not the movie you're looking for.
No, we can't. We're not going to be able to do this.
No, I think the way I should watch this is I should watch it with my 8-year-old daughter, because it will be her exposure to it too, and we'll both watch it the first time.
Yeah.
You've been good up until now not watching it. I think you just keep going.
No. I think you should watch it with his daughter so that she has the cultural reference.
I know I'm going to have to watch it at some point, and it would be with her.
Yes.
So, yes, with your daughter, I think that'd be good.
Yeah, why wouldn't 8's a little young?
No.
Yeah, I was thinking 10. I was thinking 10. Double digits.
Oof.
I think double digits are important.
I remember seeing the first Star Wars when it first came out at the Eden's.
You're not younger than me. This is fantastic.
That Eden's theater up there. I forget what it's called.
Eden Theater.
It was called
the Eden Theater.
Oh, okay. I remember as a kid.
It had a weird shape. Didn't it have like a weird.
It was like a. Yeah.
Well, Eden's the Eden's Theater 2. Eden's 1 had that really cool old one with kind of the sail shape.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Eden's 2 was like a round.
Right.
Thing.
It was like a
and
cone
Eden's
or something.
Eden's 2 was the one that had 70 millimeter.
Oh.
And so that's where they showed Star Wars. Actually, I stood online for the midnight showing of Return of the Jedi.
You stood
really?
You stood in line.
In line.
Not
why
online.
Would you be online?
Were you on AOL?
Excuse me.
On the line?
There was a line. We were instructed to stand.
On the line.
On the line. All right. I stood online.
Coming up after this break, tell me something good. Give me a call, 312-981-7200. Or text us, and Eric will read that text as long as it doesn't burn or singe his eyeballs. 312-981-7200. Tell me something good in a moment.